I move that the further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the sergeant-at-arms be instructed to bring in the absentee.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is a pastor, Carl Nielsen, from the Arlington Hills United Methodist Church in Maplewood, and then remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I invite you to be in an attitude of prayer. Creator and author of life, we give thanks for the blessing of spring, the budding trees, the sun's reflection on the sky blue waters. We gather today. Help us to be mindful of your presence and guided by your wisdom. Help us to live up to the high calling of serving the people of Minnesota in their pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. And may all that we say and all that we do reflect your grace and your peace. Amen.
Turn around. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America
and to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, did a nice
Thank
job.
Mm-hmm.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonoff, Clark, Carlson, Chaudhry, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. Next order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate files herewith returned. Senate file numbers 599, 3119, 3227, and 3446, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Okay.
The next message is on Senate File 2564, Senator Berglund. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 2564, a bill for enacting into Human Services, modifying TANF maintenance of effort programs. Senate File 2564 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
All right, Senator Berglund has a concurrence motion, and she'll explain the bill and the differences, and then we're going to be voting on a few of these, too. So
I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 2564 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amendment as amended. Okay. This, President, is the TANF maintenance of effort bill that we passed earlier this year. It allows us to back claim spending that we're doing in the budget anyway to meet maintenance of effort requirements. It also helps us to buy down our work participation rate in future years if we're not able to otherwise meet that rate. And the only change in this bill that was made by the House was an enactment date, and that is an important addition because in order to back claim, we must have our plan into the federal government by April 25th.
Discussion. Senator Berglund renews her motion that Senate concur in the amendments by the House as House File 2564
and the bill be placed under three passages amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 2564, a bill for an act relating to human services, modifying TANF maintenance of effort programs.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 58 ayes, 1 nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
The next message is on Senate File 2881, Senator Scheid. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments and concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 2881, a bill for an act relating to commerce, regulating contracts for deed, rates of interest on certain contracts, etc. Senate File 2881 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File Number 2881, and the Conference Committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a Conference Committee appointed on the part of the House, with a like Conference Committee appointed on the part of the House.
Okay, on that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
The next message is on Senate File 3049, Senator Berglund. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments and concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 3049, a bill for an act relating to children's mental health. Senate File 3049 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Berglund. This is on Senate File 3049.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 3049 and the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Senator Berglund, on the bill and the differences.
Mr. President, this was the department's children's mental health bill, and there was a small amendment added to make the meaning of the original bill more clear with no change to content. There was a second amendment that adds mental health needs work group to review the use of acute care patient days by children. And this is part of the mental health division's work plan, and they do not expect that it will represent an additional investment of staff. And the third amendment requires the Department of Human Services to collect data on client readmission after chemical dependency inpatient treatment and the cost of treatment per person. And this requirement can be met by existing reporting procedures and therefore adds no new reporting expenses. So for those reasons, I would move that we concur in the amendments by the House.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Berglund renews her motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 3049 and that the bill be placed on repassage as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 3049, a bill for an act relating to children's mental health, requiring children's mental health providers to develop a plan for and comply with requirements on the use of restrictive procedures.
Secretary will take the roll. What's Ann going to do?
Now, senators, have you voted? Desire to vote? Secretary will close the roll. We had six. 61 ayes, 1 nay. The bill is passed and it's title agreed to.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 3138, a bill for an act relating to health, changing provisions for handling genetic information. Senate File 3138 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move that Senate File 3138 be laid on the table.
Okay. On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
The next message is on Senate File 3336, Senator Foley. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 3336, a bill for an act relating to traffic regulations, providing for exemptions to vehicle window glazing restrictions. Senate File 3336 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Foley.
Amendments by the House and Senate File 3336, and the bill be placed on passage as amended. And you can.
Okay, Senator Foley, give the body a brief description of the bill and what changes were made.
The only change was it provided something that allowed the car dealers to sell a vehicle with a tinting if they sell it out of the state of Minnesota to somebody that is not a Minnesota resident.
Discussion. Senator Foley renews his motion that the Senate concur the amendments by the House to Senate File 3336 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 3336, a bill for an act relating to traffic regulations, providing for exemptions to vehicle window glazing restrictions.
Secretary will take the roll. Secretary will close the roll. We had 62 ayes, 0 nays. Bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Next message is on Senate File 3492, Senator Clark. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 3492, a bill for an act relating to public safety, extending the duration of orders for protection and restraining orders after multiple violations or continued threats. Senate File 3492 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Clark.
Mr. President, I move the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 3492 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 3563, a bill for an act relating to human services, making changes to continuing care provisions. Senate File 3563 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate do not concur with the amendments by the House to Senate File 3563 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees to be a part of the Senate to act like a conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file 3674, a bill for an act relating to legislation, correcting erroneous, ambiguous, and omitted text and obsolete references. Senate file 3674 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Moi.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 3674 and that a conference of a committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee and conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House file, herewith transmitted, House File 3574, signed Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Okay. The next order of business will be first reading of House bills. There's one printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of House bills. Next order of business is reports of committees. Senator Pogemiller to adopt the...
Mr. President, I move that committee reports printed in today's agenda be adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. The next order of business is second reading of Senate bills. Again, they are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is second reading of House bills. There's one today printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of House bills. Next order of business is reports or motions and resolutions. There are two authors' motions. Without objection, we'll take the two as one motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There's a resolution today on the agenda, resolution number 189. Without objection, the resolution will be referred to the Rules Committee. And one to be read at the desk. What is it? Oh, Senator Dibble, you have a motion to make.
Yes, Mr. President, I move that Senate File 3746 be withdrawn from the Committee on State and Local Government Operations and Oversight and re-referred to the Committee on Business, Industry, and Jobs.
Okay, on that motion, all those favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Without objection, we'll go to the next order, the introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are two printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, you want to do the calendar now?
Yeah.
So I'm made on orders motions and resolutions. I move the Senate take up the Senate calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Again, there are 10 bills listed on today's calendar. There will be roll call votes. I would encourage you to stay seated. First bill on the calendar. Number one on the calendar, House File 2837, Senator Lori.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that House File 2837, number one on the calendar, be stricken and placed on general orders.
Okay, this is your bill. Okay, on that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next bill on the calendar, number two on the calendar. Senate File 2965. This is a Senator Higgins bill. Third reading.
Senate File 2965, a bill for an act relating to children, regulating gestational carrier arrangements, etc.
Third reading. Secretary will give the bill or take the roll on the bill. All senators, having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. We had 41 ayes, 22 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Number three on the calendar is Senate File 2795. This is a Senator Latz bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 2795, a bill for an act relating to real property, providing for conveyance of interest in real property by transfer on death deeds, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators, have you voted? Desire to vote? Secretary will close the roll. Against 63 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. The fourth bill on the calendar is Senate File 3170. This is a Senator Torres Ray bill. She out for the day? Is that the? Okay, we'll skip over that. We'll go to number five on the calendar. House File 2896. This is Senator Dan Larson bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 3170, a bill for an act House File 2896, Senator Larson bill, a bill for an act relating to public buildings, removing a requirement that a city hold a referendum before building, equipping, or maintaining a memorial for war veterans.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators, having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes, 1 nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Number six on to calendar, Senate File 651. This is a Senator Pappas bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 651, a bill for an act relating to the environment, restricting the manufacture and sale of certain polybrominated diphenyl ethers.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators, have you voted? Desire to vote? Secretary will close the roll. We had 47 ayes, 16 nays. The bill is passed and it's still agreed to. Now, the seventh bill on the calendar is Senate File 3683. This is a Senator Vickerman bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 3683, a bill for an act relating to the operation of state government, changing certain provisions and programs related to agriculture, etc.
Secretary will take the roll on the bill. All senators, having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Being 60 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Now, the eighth bill on the calendar It's House File 2904. This is a Senate arrest bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 2904, a bill for an act relating to state government operations, establishing procedures for state agencies to assist communities to recover from a natural disaster.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Being 61 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The ninth bill on the calendar, House Bill 3569. This is a Senator Tomassoni bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 3569, a bill for an act relating to workers' health, directing the University of Minnesota to study workers' health, including lung health, appropriating money, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The last bill on the Senate calendar, number 10, Senate File 2942. This is a Senator Pappas bill. The secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 2942, a bill for an act relating to higher education, establishing a P20 education partnership, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Being 60 ayes, 1 nay, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Mr. President.
Senator Polk Miller.
Mr. President, remaining on the order of motions of business resolutions, I move the Senate take up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the Senate to now resolve itself into Committee of the Whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, there's a list of four bills, and I would yield to that I'd like to designate. I'd yield to Senator Rest.
General Orders, number 11 on General Orders, House File 3172, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that House File 3172 be recommended to pass.
Senator Rest, description of the bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, House File 3172 is a compilation of a number of elections bills and provisions from 10A, campaign finance provisions, with most of which passed last year, versions of them, and or was a or an agreed upon language that has been worked on by the Secretary of State, the House, the Governor's Office, and which I have also worked on with members of the committee. And I will briefly go through the provisions so that members know what they would be voting on, and I do have an amendment. The first section comes from Senate File 758, which passed in 2007, and it exempts lobbying activities that are related to qualifying a question for placement on the ballot from those that must be reported by a political committee or a political fund. In essence, it means that there needs to be only one report that's made. Sections 2 to 4 come from Senate File 123, and there will be an amendment which changes those provisions slightly to make sure that it's clarified what is asked for. And it deals with the first registration of political committees and political funds and principal campaigns committee, requiring them to register with the Campaign Finance Board by the end of the next business day after it's received a loan or contribution that has to be reported. Section 3 makes several changes to the reporting of last-minute contributions. Members are aware that when we receive a contribution within that final accounting period of greater than $400, that we have to make a special reporting. This makes that special reporting for all candidates at a level that's equal to ours by virtue of a percentage. That is 80% of their, anything greater than 80%, which would mean that for constitutional offers, the governor, lieutenant governor, that level would be 1,600. It would be 800 for candidates for attorney general, and we keep the $400 for candidates for the legislature, but it's also $400 for candidates for Secretary of State and the state auditor, and we also make those reporting times and posting times that by the end of the next business day. Section 4 advances the deadline for filing the affidavit of contributions in order to qualify for the public subsidy, making it the same date as the cutoff date for the primary reporting report. Sections 5 and 6, and we also passed those provisions last year in a slightly different form. Sections 5 and 6 come from Senate File 208, which was Senator Sharon's bill, and passed the Senate as part of two other bills in 207, and they we have again worked with Secretary of State and the Governor's Office to come to some resolution of those issues, and they provide for the delivery of absentee ballots to an agent of certain persons and the return of ballots by the agents. Sections 8, 13, and 16 come from Senate File 753, which was a bill by Senator Rummel, which also passed the Senate in 2007, that authorize a procedure for the appointment of election judges that are not affiliated with the political party. Section 9, 14, 15, and 17 come from Senate File 380, which was a bill by Senator Wieger, which also passed the Senate in 2007 and makes a variety of changes to election laws regarding school boards and other local governments. Section 18 comes from a bill that I previously had that this year that provides for shorter deadlines for completing post-election review of election results by electronic voting systems. The current law, if it was done in accordance with the current law rather than faster than what the current law requires, would have the post-election results being reported way after the Congress meets and could have been even longer than that. So what we're doing is shortening all of those periods, and we don't have any reason to believe that by shortening those time periods where those reviews are done, that will do any damage to the accuracy of the work. Then Senate Section 19 comes from Senate File 248, which also passed the Senate in 2007, and it allows for political committees, campaign funds, to increase the amount by which they can make a contribution to a charity from $50 to $100, and to remove the limit for a principal campaign committee that dissolves within 1 year after the contribution is made to make any amount of a contribution that's left in their campaign fund. And then Section 20 comes from Senate File 2552, which is Senator Gerlach's bill, which authorizes the use of voter registration campaigns in existence on July 31st of 2007 to be used up until they expire. New ones have to have a Tennyson warning on them. And Section 21 deals with the general effective dates. Mr. Chairman, I have the A 50 amendment.
Secretary will report the rest A 50 amendment.
Senator Ress moves to amend House File 3172 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 14th as follows. Page 1 after line 27, insert. This is amendment A50.
Senator Ress on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the A50 amendment, a section is added to the 10A provisions regarding non-campaign disbursements, and provides that any candidate, not merely a legislator, but any candidate, which would apply to people running for Congress, people running for constitutional officers, as well as those currently in those offices, so incumbents as well as candidates, to pay for the costs associated with attending a political party state or national convention if it's held in the state of Minnesota. Currently, you can do that as a campaign expense, but not as a non-campaign expense. And this change would allow you to account for it as a non-campaign expenditure. And Section 3 of the amendment identifies an issue that had been brought before the Campaign Finance Board that called for a return of some plaques that members had received in recognition of some legislative award or whatever. And because it is not clear whether there was some limit on the cost of that or the resale value of that, we decided to add a provision that a plaque that has a resale value of $5 or less would be available and eligible for a legislator to receive. Then on the section that I described about the pre-election reports, this corrects that. This amendment corrects what was in the original bill to make sure that it's possible to accomplish by having the reports due within by the end of the next business day, rather than a number of hours, except for reports that are filed electronically. And the section 6 of the amendment changes that word from deadline to cutoff date. And then Section 8 is a provision that that is in several other bills. In fact, it's in the bill that would be the other election bill that I have up today, dealing with closed captioning of campaign advertisements, and was a separate bill actually added as an amendment on at least three bills, and this one being the most appropriate place for it to be. This is another one where I've worked with members of the deaf and hard of hearing community, with the governor's office and various legislators to begin to move Minnesota in the direction of closed captioning of our campaign advertisements for the deaf or hard of hearing. And the amendment would call on candidates, so it's not, it's starting small, but call on candidates to provide closed captioning for any campaign advertisement that you put on TV, and most people don't use a whole lot of TV, but some do. And so for those that do, there would be closed captioning for anything less than 2 minutes. And if that's not possible, to just write a letter to the campaign finance board explaining why you're unable to do that. It is a very small cost to add it on to any campaign advertisement. From what we've been told by those that are familiar with the issue, it costs less than $100 to do that. You also can place on a website the transcript as an alternative, a transcript for radio ads, so that the deaf and hard of hearing community would have access to the radio ads that you are putting out. Ultimately, we would hope that, just like our floor sessions, that all political discussion, debates that are on cable or on TV would be closed caption, but we're not going that full step right at this point. So this applies to candidates. If it is for whatever reason is not done, you just have to inform the campaign finance board, and this only applies to 10A candidates, to inform the campaign finance board that you're not doing it. Otherwise, it would be expected, and the transcripts for radio ads would be posted on a website, obviously, if you have one. Now, not all deaf and hard of hearing folks have computers, and so we understand that this is not a full-fledged access, because some people would not have access to a computer, but it is a start. Fully 10%, it is estimated, of the public, and therefore of the voting public, have issues and difficulty with hearing. And this is a way of including that community in the political process. In particular, I think it's important for us to do this and to start this year, because we know that the most prevalent injury that is endured by those in the military who are in harm's way is permanent hearing loss. So this is also an opportunity for the legislature to reach out to veterans. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the amendment, and I would stand for questions and or support.
Further discussion on the A50 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Senator Rust. Further discussion on House File 3172, Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just would like to add that oftentimes elections bills can be mired in controversy, and this is a bill that is not the case. These provisions, the long list that Senator Rust has gone through, have been thoroughly vetted with she's gone out of her way to include me in the discussions on these and keep me posted on these as the lead minority member on the committee, and also it's been thoroughly vetted with the governor's office and also with those in the House from both parties, and I just wanted to say that members can feel comfortable voting for this particular elections bill.
Further discussion on House File 3172. Seeing none, Senator Rest renews her motion that when this committee do arise, House File 3172 be recommended to pass. Seeing no further discussion on that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Next on general orders is number 12, Senate File 3370, Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 3370 be recommended to pass.
Senator Olsen, on that motion.
Mr. Chair, this is a bill related to costs of contested local elections. Local elections, when they were contested previously, had been done by through the county attorney's office. Now they're done through the administrative law office. And there's been billing back to the counties. And what this bill does, it bills back the costs of a complaint back to the jurisdiction that it originated in, if it was a city or a school district or a township or a county. So I think it's a fair bill that instead of spreading the cost over a county, it brings it to the local entity where the complaint arises from. Thank you. And I'm willing to stand for any questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 3370. Seeing none, Senator Olsen has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3370 be recommended to pass. On that motion, all in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Number 34 on general orders, House File 3066, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, is that the last bill on general orders?
Senator Rest, no, it's not. Senator Cohen has a bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would like progress momentarily.
Progress has been requested. All in favor say aye. Opposed? Okay. Next is number 62 on general orders. And we're looking for Senator Cohen. Members, there seems to be some unauthorized material that was passed out on the Senate floor. If we could get somebody to collect it and dispose of it appropriately, it would be appreciated. Senator Cohen, Senate File 3363.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 3363 be recommended to pass.
Senator Cohen, on that motion.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is a bill, I'm looking for Senator Rest, that Senator Rest and I have worked on along with a number of other legislators. This is the budget reform package. There were several bills introduced at the start of the session. We decided in consultation with the other body that we would prepare this as a single bill. I'm going to ask Senator Rest to speak to some of her sections of the bill in a minute. Let me just indicate that this does several things. Members, let me just kind of take things back a step. One of the frustrations in this body over the last number of years has been a desire to get more information, to provide more information in the budget process to members, to the public. And this is not to offer criticism of the present administration or the Department of Finance. This has been, to be fair, an ongoing fight between the legislature and the administration, no matter which administration we're talking about. When I first became a finance chairman in 1993, a division chairman, 15 years ago, I found that I had significantly more information provided to me in the budget pages, more access to information. I think what's happened over the years is as the budget has become more complicated, it's become more difficult to provide that information, and as a consequence, we find ourselves with less information. So what this bill intends is to provide more of this information to the legislature. So members, if you go through the bill, there is a requirement, and I'm sorry, I mentioned Senator Rest. I also should also mention Senator Clark has a good part of this bill as well, which is the Minnesota Milestones section, and there are also articles in the bill authored originally by Senator Sharon and Senator John Dahl, and would ask them to speak to those sections. But what this does is it requires the administration to provide more information to us in terms of the promulgation of the budget, so that when we are putting the budget together, we have the information in terms of agency requests. That's a very big omission, I think, if you compare what we have today to what we had a number of years ago. It requires the administration to let us know what they're doing, what they're talking about, allows us access to some of the documents so that, again, in a shorter session, we have more knowledge. Again, this is not to fault the administration, but I think the difficulty we have is that it clearly is a little bit one-sided. That's a combination of our lack of information that's also just reflective of our legislative session. I'm somebody who defends a part-time legislature. I don't think we need to be here 12 months out of 12 months. But in the process, when in a budget year, we have less time to put everything together. So a good part of this allows us to see the drafts of the budget proposals from the Department of Finance. It also asks to have information which will show the expenditure and revenue history for a three-year period, a look back, as opposed to right now when we just have the previous biennium. It also asks in Section 12 of the bill to, that's where you have the details as to the total information we're looking for in terms of budget information. I should make it clear, members, that we do have a couple of other things in here that go to the budget reform process that I've been working on. One is, members will certainly recall that last year I had legislation on the floor that reinstated inflation in the budget forecast. This bill does that as well. And it also has language that states that where we have a surplus, we should transfer that surplus to the budget reserve until we reach the level of 5% of general fund expenditures. That's been a provision that obviously has been difficult to implement. Members will recall that last year we made a good faith effort in the Senate where we took a lot of the one-time money placed into the budget reserve. I don't think we were quite at that 5% figure, but we were coming closer. If you talk to economists who are involved with our budget process and people outside the budget process, the recommendation you always hear from those people with expertise is that we ought to have a budget reserve at 5% of our general fund expenditures. That figure now would be about $1.5 billion, give or take. Our current budget reserve is at $653. We also have some extensive language in here. Maybe, Senator Rest, if you'd like to talk about what you are attempting to do with the fiscal note process. Many of us who have been chairman find that the fiscal note process is one of frustration in terms of being able to get an accurate fiscal note, being able to get it on time. You can talk to the senator to my right, Senator Berglund, and she can talk to you in great detail about the frustrations we have with human service fiscal notes. So, Senator Rest, possibly you could talk to us for a couple of minutes about what you've worked on in the fiscal note process.
Thank you,
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Cohen. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss the bills that are part of this fiscal reform that you and I and others in the legislature have been working on. We, in this particular, or these particular sections, we have proposed that there's a process for legislators to appeal the estimates of a fiscal note when informal negotiations, which almost all of us have from time to time, have not occurred or have not been effective in adequately airing or resolving concerns of legislators about the estimate. We allow appeals to be initiated by the chair of the House Finance or Ways and Means Committee or by the Senate Finance Committee to the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy and the Commissioner of Finance. The appeal itself, we would think, would need to be a really serious dispute on the preliminary judgment made by the Department of Finance, and really not amenable to the informal kinds of negotiations that we wish would occur. The appeal then itself has to identify the analysis that's being contested, more the analysis than the actual result itself. But what were the underlying assumptions that led to the result? And the appeal would have to detail the reasons for contesting the conclusions. There's a timeline for the commission to meet, that is within 5 days of receiving the appeal, and any conclusions then reached by the commission, and the Department of Finance would be involved in that, would be considered the final estimate on the bill as long as the fiscal elements remained unchanged. We know that often when we have a bill that we are told has a fiscal impact, sometimes we don't find out about it until we think we're good to go with a bill, and all of a sudden here comes the dreaded fiscal note that we then search for ways to eliminate, and or we would ask department, state agency to eat the fiscal note or to put it aside or to absorb the costs of it. Frequently, we may change the time period in which something goes into effect to eliminate the impact of a fiscal note, or we may indeed find just an out-and-out error that the Department of Finance has made. That happened actually with a bill that we just passed on the calendar today, where the Pollution Control Agency, with regard to dealing with the underground petroleum tanks, had put a fiscal note on the bill dealing with the framework for disaster relief. And at the point that they had done that, they had overlooked the first part of the bill, where in order to even bring those that framework into existence, that a federal disaster declaration would have had to have been made. So it's not an ongoing yearly thing. There was clearly an error. They saw there was an error, and they withdrew from that fiscal note. That's not the kind of dispute that we are talking about here, and we would expect that this process would be used very infrequently. Again, most of the disputes are resolved either at a staff level or by clarifying language. But there are cases when that cannot occur or does not occur, and there is a serious disagreement. These particular provisions in the bill then would allow for a much more public forum of those discussions and may also provide information on issues that could lead to further reforms, ways to better consider the costs and savings in the fundings. So by requiring the appeal to go through the chairs and to be backed up by analysis of disputed estimates, frequent and or arbitrary appeals would be discouraged. So that's the portion of the bill that deals with fiscal notes. And I don't see Senator Cohen, but I guess I can go ahead and describe the other part of the bill that reflects two other bills that I have in this bill. And the next one are sections 9, 10, 12, and 18. Senator Cohen, did you want me to talk about those now, too? Those provisions deal with Senate File 2886, which makes some modifications, proposals for modifications to the state budget requirements. The bill excludes legislative requests from the budget data privacy statute to allow greater access to help lawmakers when they are trying to deal with the governor's budget proposals to make better decisions. There are a number of states that have separate legislative budget offices, just like the Congress does with regard to the executive branch and the administration, where they prepare a budget, the Congressional Budget Office prepares a budget, and then they argue about which budget is the, and debate which budget is the most adequate and appropriate and so on. We are not proposing that for Minnesota, but we are proposing that there be greater participation in the budget development process than is currently the case, allowing legislators to get into that process a whole lot earlier. And to, but to protect the privacy, there was an amendment made in the Finance Committee to make sure that legislators understood the protections on the privacy of the data as it was coming from the Department of Finance, to involve them in the budget making process. The data then would have to include information that supports the estimated expenditures and specify what the agencies must provide in terms of full explanations for their request for increased appropriations, and to do that by October 1st. Now, some might say, well, what about the years in which there is an election for governor? And you would have this an election for ourselves and the whole legislature, for that matter. Wouldn't that be premature? But that's maybe the whole point, and that is that this is an ongoing institutional involvement in the budget process, not a partisan one and not necessarily a political one, except to the extent that everything we do is partisan and political. We know that a governor, even running for election, or even one who has decided not to run for re-election, has his...
Senator Ress, something is wrong with your mic. Can you try it again?
Is it okay now? No?
No.
Maybe I should try the... Mr. Chairman, is this better?
Much better.
Sorry.
No, it's
not better. Nope, it's not better.
Mr. President?
Somebody's here to the rescue.
Senator Tomasoni.
Is there a way we can learn how to do that?
You think my bills would be better if you could only hear every other word or every fifth word, something like that?
Senator Rest.
Well, I'm not going to, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to repeat my lengthy discussion there. But again, this is a proposal to allow the legislature institutionally to become part of the budget process earlier on. And why October 1st? Well, we know that a governor, even going out of office and or one running for re-election, who may or may not be re-elected, has his state agencies that preparing budget documents well in advance of the first of the year, when the outcomes of elections would be known. So it is a way of having us involved early on with better information and having to have a and having the opportunity to have a more significant impact. The third bill is the language from Senate File 3398, and although there may be some portions of the bill that are controversial for some of you, I hope that this one will be something that we all agree is a step in the right direction with regard to technology in the preparation of our state budget information. And I have worked with the department or the Office of Enterprise Technology to come up with, again, a framework for reporting to the legislature regarding the process for which state agency technology requests, and that doesn't just mean buying a software package or buying a couple of new computers, but it means the impact that technology has on the day-to-day operations of state government, where in this day, more and more people are expecting among our constituents to be able to access state government services on a 24/7 basis every day of the year, for government to operate when it is convenient for our constituents, not when it is convenient for bureaucrats or for politicians. Also, we are interested in having information about the assistance that is provided by the OET in developing those several proposals. So, a state agency that has a telecommunications project with a total cost of more than $1 million, which begins to be significant, they need to register that project with the chief information officer of the OET. If the project has more than a cost of $5 million, the CIO must monitor its progress. And if it's more than $10 million, we ask them to have an annual independent audit or review of the project. Too often when proposals for technology come in, we get this big estimate. Well, it could be between $10 and $20 million. And we understand that as a low bid and a high bid, and maybe we just split the difference and fund it for $15 million. But the way in which the technology is developed is indeed a range of costs. And as the project or proposal is developed, the cost can become much more specific. In addition, it is possible that throughout that process that a glitch occurs or some impediment to the process that would either cost more, or some efficiency is discovered that would make the project cost less. And we would be asking the Department of Enterprise Technology to be on top of that and to be following that and to let the legislature know by January 15th of each year their review of projects for information and telecommunications technology that is paid for with state dollars. We ask the OET, the CIO, to report that to the chairs and ranking minority members of the commission, of the committees and divisions that have jurisdiction over the Office of Enterprise Technology, once again by January 15th. So those are the provisions that are in the bill that are are ones that I have worked on and proposed, and I thank Senator Cohen for the opportunity to include them in this bundled group of bills on state budget reform.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at the floor. I don't know if Senator Sharon would like to speak to, maybe not, or Senator Dahl to his provision in the bill.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Senator Cohen, for including this into your bill. This particular provision is what it does is extends additional whistleblower protection to state employees, and I believe it's healthy language for as we promote our objective of more government transparency and accountability. And state employees are often in the best position to communicate info that could be useful in improving government services, and this legislation is intended to provide a level of comfort, I guess, that they're free to do so in a good faith manner without feeling there'd be some sort of retribution for passing or providing that information to either a legislator or constitutional officer. It's very simple language. Simply states a state employee communicates to a legislator or a constitutional officer information that the employee in good faith believes to be truthful and accurate regarding ways to improve state services. That's the extent of that particular provision. Thank you again, Senator Cohen.
Senator Cohen.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharon has a section of the bill that deals with local fiscal notes, and if I could have her explain that.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a provision. It's Section 7 in the bill. And what it does is it expands under the current law, the chair of the tax committee and the minority ranking member can request a local fiscal impact note. What this does is add the chairs and the minority member of the Finance Committee and the Ways and Means Committee in the House to also be able to request local impact notes, and then to distribute the results of those notes to all of the committees that have an interest in a particular piece of legislation. Now, the background on this is that local governments, cities, school boards, counties, often have an impact from the legislation that we pass at the state level. We have good public policy, but oftentimes we do not or are not willing to fund those proposals at the state level. And it has an enormous impact on the local level, and it may, in fact, impact the decisions that we make here if that is more transparent and a part of good government, to have a transparent view of what it is we're doing with our public policy. And most importantly, I think what it does is it allows the public to understand if we're making a shift in how we are paying for government services. Because we can, without the public really understanding it, establish public policy that has a local impact and therefore change how we're paying for government onto local property taxes or local costs rather than through state taxes, primarily through income tax. So this would make more transparent and allow the opportunity for the public to engage in the discussion not only on the policy, but something that might more subtly be occurring, which is a change in how we pay for government services from one that might be more regressive to one that is progressive. So this provision, Subdivision 7 in the bill, increases the opportunity for us to engage in the discussion of the local fiscal impact of public policy established at the state level.
Senator Cohen.
And Mr. Chairman, finally, if Senator Clark can talk about the Minnesota Milestones sections of the bill.
Senator Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is a positive moving forward part of this legislation. We passed a bill off the Senate floor last year that helped us start looking at reinvigorating the Minnesota Milestones that came into play when Governor Carlson was here. It was about result-based budgeting, and it was part of thousands of Minnesotans participating in the conversation. We've been bipartisanly working on this, and finance, admin, and others have been very positive about some of the changes that we can bring forward to give both us and departments and the public better information from which we can make decisions in the upcoming years.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes the discussion of the bill. Happy to stand for amendments or further discussion and debate. I do have the A5 amendment. I know Senator Betzold has an amendment as well.
Are you offering the A5 amendment?
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
The Secretary will report the A5 amendment.
Senator Cohen moves to amend Senate File 3363 as follows, page 9, line 21. This is Amendment A-5.
Senator Cohen, on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, would move the amendment. It does a couple things. It's a technical amendment. It changes the time on page 9 to provide the modification 10 days as opposed to 2 weeks after the forecast. And then it modifies the repealer section because the two repealers we have in the bill are now obsolete. So I would move the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A4 amendment.
The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Betzel moves to amend Senate File 3363 as follows, page 7, delete Section 11 and insert. This is Amendment A-4.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chairman and members, the A-4 amendment is a result of a discussion we had in the Finance Committee. Section 11 of the bill takes current law, which requires the agencies to file certain information with the Commissioner of Finance, and they have to do it in even-numbered years by October 15 and by November 30th. And there's certain information that's that has to be filed. It's public information. And then our staff, particularly our nonpartisan staff, then they use that information to help the budget chairs and the interested legislators in both legislative bodies to help prepare our budget. The way that Section 11 is worded, however, it requires that the information would have to be submitted in the first day of October preceding in an even-numbered year and has to be filed with the Commissioner of Finance and the committees of the legislature. Now, of course, in every even-numbered year, that would mean that the House of Representatives is always up in every even-numbered year, and in many even-numbered years, the Senate is also up for elections as well, too. So as far as the legislators are concerned, you'd be submitting information to legislators when you don't even know who's going to be winning the elections. You don't even know who is going to be in control of a legislative body. You don't know who is going to be chairing or in charge of what committees or who's going to be playing what roles. So that information for the legislators may not be very helpful in early October. The information, however, would be very helpful to legislative staff because they are here. They may not, especially nonpartisan staff, are not affected by the elections. They are going to be here regardless. They are going to help, but they do need this information. And so rather than having the information submitted to the legislature, this would take the same information that is currently being submitted now, and it would be expanding with some additional information as we outlined in the current Section 11, and it would simply be required by October 15th and then by November 15th as opposed to November 30th. In talking to legislative staff, they find that getting the information earlier is more helpful to them in sorting through the information and guiding us in making our decisions once the legislature actually is organized and convened. So I think that the A4 amendment is a better way to approach the language that we already have on the bill. So I stand for any questions.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I disagree with Senator Betzel just on the basic premise of who it is that needs to be involved in receiving the information. I certainly have no objection to improving the process for legislative staff, but the this part of the bill has come about as a discussion of the role of the legislature. The legislature itself is an institution and legislators individually, and it seems to me should be independent of whether or not someone is standing for election or not. And as I mentioned to begin with, a governor who's standing for re-election or a governor who's not going to run again still has an obligation to be putting together a budget for the following year. And it seems to me that the legislature should be as involved in that as is appropriate and not merely legislative staff. So with all due respect, I agree and hope people would vote no.
Senator Betzel.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, let me just make it quite clear what current law does and does not do. Under current law, information is already provided by the agencies to the Commissioner of Finance, and it's public information, and our staff currently does get that information because it is public information. Some of the additional information that's being sought is not currently provided. The amendment does provide it both in the bill that you have before you as well as in the amendment. However, as I say, you do have to look at what the current language is in the bill. And it does say that no later than the first day of October preceding the convening of the legislature. Now, this is an even-numbered year, which again means that many legislators are up for election. They must file with the commissioners and the finance committees of the legislature. So you're filing something with committees, which are going to change, you know, in many cases within the month. We don't know who's going to win the elections. If it's an even-numbered year, there's going to be elections in November. And following that, there may be changes in the committees and so forth. So you may be filing information with a committee in October, and there may be an entirely different set of people there on those committees within a few weeks after the elections. So to me, that doesn't make a lot of sense. However, if we're seeking the information, then it's a better practice, I think, to just have the agencies file it with the commissioner. Our staff has access to all that information, and in fact, we've even moved it up from November 30th to November 15th so that our staff can have it even earlier and be in a better position to advise the new legislature that's going to be convening in the following January as to what options we have available with our budget. So I think actually from a practical standpoint, the A4 amendment is the way to go.
Further discussion on the A4 amendment. Senator Sinjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. And would Senator Betzel yield?
He will yield.
Senator Betzel, I have honestly listened intently. I have read. I have tried to understand. And yet I don't. Could we just go through your amendment? And maybe, Senator Betzel, you can maybe bring it down a little bit, but I'm reading here in terms of information, calling it a statement of work. I'm looking at something that talks about a list of each employee's name, title, and salary. If you can just bring it down a little bit and tell me what this is all about and what it's for and what the benefit of this is to society and to our legislative process. Tell you what, you know, when you get these, it's a little difficult. You're not necessarily tuned in to getting new information. But please, Senator Betzel, bring it down so I can understand it.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sanjum will be happy to. And again, you have to understand what current law is, what the bill does, and what my amendment does to understand how they all come together. Under current law, each agency is required in every even-numbered year to submit certain information to the Commissioner of Finance. And the current, you can see, if you look at the bill, start in Section 11, you can see the stricken language. That is what is currently required to be provided by each agency. And it has to be done every even-numbered year. So if the governor makes those recommendations, the agencies make those recommendations, and it's public information, in order for the legislative process to start the following January. Now, even if you have a governor who's leaving office, as, say, Governor Ventura was leaving office, his agency still had to provide that information in October of, in that case, 2002, without even knowing who his successor was going to be, but he still had to provide that information regarding the budget so that the new governor and the new legislature would be able to start with some certain basic information on budget estimates for the upcoming biennial, a comprehensive statement of the missions to be accomplished, and so forth. That is what is currently done, and it has to be done in October, and then updated information by November 30th. That's current law. The bill wants to expand that information, and they want additional information to be provided, the estimates of the increased appropriations. They would like the bill before you a statement of the work to be accomplished during the preceding biennium. They would like a list of employees, their titles, their salaries. They would like a comprehensive and integrated statement of agency mission. So what the bill before you wants, kind of the same information on the budget, but more, so that the legislature has a better information that they can work off of when the legislature convenes in January of the odd-numbered year. So I guess regardless of whether my amendment is adopted or not, that is what the bill before you is trying to do, expand current law to add additional information. But the concern that I had was that the way that the bill is worded is that the information is to be submitted not only to the Commissioner of Finance, but to the Finance Committees of the Legislature, and it's to be done in October of the even-numbered year. Now, if you stop and think of it, if you have October of an even-numbered year, every single October of every single even-numbered year, the House of Representatives is up for election in November. So submitting this information to the finance committees in the House in October is submitting it to people who may or may not be holding those positions after the November elections. So I question, why should we be doing it to legislators who may or may not be in a position to use that information? And in many, but not all, many of the Octobers of even-numbered years, the Senate is also up for election. And so we would be submitting the information to legislators who may or may not be in a position to be using that information the following January. Now, it's still useful information because we do have legislative staff, nonpartisan, as well as partisan staff, who do use the information when it is filed. They're not really affected so much by the elections, but they do take the information currently that's filed in October and then again in November. They start analyzing that data so that they are in a position to be advising and counseling the legislature on their recommendations once we start the budget process in January. So it's actually worthwhile information. It's information that should be filed with the Commissioner of Finance on October 1st, as current law currently says. My amendment moves up the second date from November 30th to October 15th because in talking to staff, they find that the sooner they get the supplemental information, the better off they are to try to help the legislature. So the big difference, though, Senator Senjum, is again, my amendment does not say submit the information in October of the even-numbered years to the finance committees of the legislature for legislators, you know, who may or may not be in those positions in a few months, but to provide the information to the Commissioner of Finance so that our staff, legislative staff, will still get that information, the expanded information that's in the bill and is also in my amendment. They'll get that additional information so that they're in a better position to advise us on our legislative options once the legislature is organized, once the committees have been appointed, and once we're ready to go, usually in late December or early January. And I hope that that covers the basis, Senator Senjum. If you still need further information, I'll be happy to take another run at it for you.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Senator Bedsole. And if you yield once more, what is the legislative need for a list of each employee's name, title, and salary? How does that help us do our work? We could get that anyway, I think. But
well,
Senator Bedsole,
Mr. Chair and Senator Sinjam, I would have to defer, I guess, I think it's to Senator Cohen on that particular question, because the information was part of his underlying bill. My amendment was just trying to identify the timelines and whether it should be sent to the legislators. So I just took the very same information that he was suggesting in Section 11, and I just pulled that over and put that into my amendment as well, too, as the same information, just in a different route to get the legislature. But I believe Senator Cohen might be in a better position to discuss why that particular part is needed.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Betzolt, I guess from your last answer, I might be misdirecting my question, but as I understand it, what you're trying to do is just suggest that as a practical matter, information that's being requested ought to be done in a different way than the bill suggests, and I think you may have a point, but the question I was really going to ask was on line 1.10 of your amendment that asks for a statement of the work accomplished during the preceding biennium and proposed to be accomplished. And if I take the meaning of your last answer correctly, that should be a question I probably should direct to Senator Cohen. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, yes. If you look at the bill on page 7.29, that's the very same language that is currently in the bill. So the information that the underlying bill is requesting, I'm still adopting that within the amendment. Just again, how it gets to the legislature is a different way that I'm proposing to do it, but I'm not really saying, you know, I'm not really addressing that as part of my amendment, because I just adopted that from the underlying bill. You can see that in the underlying bill as part of the amendment.
Further discussion on the A4 Betzold motion to amend. Seeing none, Senator Betzel renews his motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A51 amendment.
The Secretary will report the A51 amendment.
Senator Frederickson moves to amend Senate File 3363 as follows. Page 5, delete Section 8. Page 7, delete Section 11. This is Amendment A51.
Senator Frederickson on the A51 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members, part of this amendment goes to the topic that we were just discussing. It deals with how the executive branch of government goes about preparing their budget. Actual preparation of the state budget begins probably shortly after we typically adjourn on the third or fourth Monday of May, when the Commissioner of Finance sends to the agencies the parameters for information they're going to need for developing the next state budget. And the Commissioner of Finance might include in those instructions the amount of inflation, if any, the amount of cuts if we are anticipating a downturn in finances, if the budget looks like it's going to be in surplus or the economy is growing, which activities might grow in the state budget. And as was discussed previously, all that information comes back to the Commissioner of Finance by October 15th. And the Commissioner of Finance will share that with the governor, work with the governor's staff. And as was stated in a previous discussion, by November 30th, if an agency for some reason would not have submitted the information, the Commissioner of Finance would make that submission. But what Section 11 does, what I'm going to talk about first, is expands the amount of information that would be relayed to the legislature after November 30th, expand that information from what is currently provided to the legislature. If you look on line 734 to 82, now the commissioner shall send the final budget format and the agency budget estimates for the next biennium and the copies of the filed materials to the Ways and Means and Finance Committee. Then there is a crucial last sentence that Section 11 strikes, except that the commissioner shall not be required to transmit information that identifies executive branch budget decision items. And this is where the governor of the state of Minnesota, explores what policy changes the governor might recommend to the legislature. The governor might request some changes in the budget that he would never anticipate, would never want to make, but as an exercise of getting additional information, exploring all of the options, would request that they be included in those budget decisions. And I think it would be a huge mistake to require that those be transmitted to the legislature also. Then I would like to bring you to Section 8 then, which is a data privacy section. And what Section 8 does is makes almost all of the material that the governor uses to make budget decisions non-public data until after the governor submits the budget to the state legislature, when all of that information does become public, except preliminary drafts that the governor and the governor's staff had used in preparing the budget. So eventually it becomes all public data, but only after the legislature has made, after the governor has made decisions about what is going to be in the governor's budget and presented them to the legislature. Now, I think what this bill would do, if Sections 8 and 11 remain in the bill, is stifle information exchange between the agencies and the governor. It would restrict the free flow of information between agencies and governor, and it would restrict the alternatives that the governor might discuss with his staff and also the agencies. Because if this information is going to have to be released to the legislative leaders and also legislative staff, and in this political environment, almost for sure, if it is politically sensitive, it is going to be leaked to media, leaked to interest groups in an effort to harm the governor's proposal before it's even delivered. This is information that needs to be kept non-public data until the governor has made the decisions that the governor wants to make to guide the governor's administration in the direction that the governor wants to take the state, and should not be made public, in my view, until after the governor has presented the budget to the legislature. I think this strikes at the governor's prerogative to explore policy alternatives. And I think, as if nothing else, as a separation of powers, that the executive branch has the right to keep this information non-public until the budget is presented and the legislature starts to deal with the budget the governor presents.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, over the years, I think it would be a fair statement that Senator Frederickson and I have agreed on a lot more than what we have disagreed on. This is a matter that we disagree on. And let me make it clear again, members, that anything in this legislation is not aimed at the particular administration. I've served with four administrations, Governors Perpich, Carlson, Ventura, and Plenty. And this is a frustration that I've had with all administrations. But I would oppose Senator Ferguson's amendment because it does take out significant parts of the bill that attempt simply to have information provided to the legislature. Senator Frederickson suggests that this will interfere with the prerogative of the governor. I would suggest that that is not the case. There's nothing to keep the governor from working with the governor's agencies, with other people within the agencies in the promulgation of the budget. This just provides information back to the legislature. I was provided, when we heard the bill in the Finance Committee, with a section of old budget pages which I believe are actually in the Legislative Reference Library. I've not seen them for quite a period of time. But I looked at those budget pages and realized how much more complete the information was. You know, I've stated this numerous times, that what I recall is, but in looking at these budget pages a couple weeks ago, there is no question that there was much more complete information. This provides the opportunity to, again, have more complete information, and I don't think it's a problem for the legislature to have complete information. Senator Resch can speak to some of the comparative work she has done. There was a working group of legislators from both the Senate and the air body working on these issues, and what was striking was that there are a number of states that provide much more complete information than we have in Minnesota, and yet those governors are able to proceed accordingly and promulgate a budget and get it done on time. So I'm not sure why we would have to be not alone, but you know why this does not make us a unique state. And again, I would ask members to oppose the amendment. The opportunity is to provide information back to the legislature.
Senator Fredrickson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen said, and I believe him, that this is not directed essentially and only at Governor Plenty. But on the flip side of that, I would say also that my concern is not only for Governor Plenty, but all the future governors that we have in the state of Minnesota. Because I think when an individual stands for runs for the office of governor, is elected as governor, that individual should have the prerogative to have some communication within the agency and have some privileged information back and forth between the agencies of the executive branch and the governor's office, no matter who that governor is, whether the governor is a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent. I think that the chief executive of the state of Minnesota deserves to have that kind of free flow of information without fear of reading it in the state's newspapers and hearing it on the radio airwaves the next morning after having a discussion on what prerogatives the governor might choose to include in the governor's budget. So I want to assure you that my concern is not only for Governor Plenty, but all the future governors of the state of Minnesota.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I rise to support Senator Fredrickson's amendment, especially the deletion of Section 8. I do, too, have concern about saying that this has to be given to legislative chairs and legislative staff upon request, but that it is to be considered protected non-public data. Members, you know, it's so easy for somebody to leak something like this out and never claim responsibility for it. And of course, sources are protected by the media. And I think it's really a disadvantage for those trying to put together a preliminary draft. It's actually a preliminary draft that is going to be out in the public before they want it to be. And as current law, if we delete this section in particular, we'll just go back to current law that says that information is available after the budget is presented by the governor. So it does become public, but after he presents the budget to the legislature. And I think that is most appropriate, because I think that the governor's office should have the right to work on their proposals without a lot of input. Well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, of course they want input, but people knowing what they're thinking of to immediately try and change their mind before they've even really fleshed out the whole proposal. I think that they should have that opportunity. And what could very well happen, of course, is instead of putting anything down on paper so that they don't have a preliminary draft, they'll just have conversations. And I don't know, they could probably get around it, but I don't think we should force them to do that. We shouldn't just force them into having simply conversations instead of being able to have some written correspondence about it that would have to be available to the legislature upon request. And so I think Senator Fredrickson's proposal to leave the law as is a good plan.
Mr. Chair, the amendment presents two separate distinct questions to us, and I think it'd be appropriate to divide the amendment. One is to delete Section 8, and the other is to delete Section 11. So I'd like to have the amendment divided and have them decided separately.
Okay, that's certainly doable.
Mr. Chairman.
Which one would you, what order would you, that's Senator Frederickson's choice, I guess. Is Senator
Mr. Chairman, let's take 8 first, Section 8.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
I request a roll call on both parts.
Three hands. A roll call. Okay, we're discussing the line 1.2 at this point. Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, I also rise to support Senator Frederickson's amendment, and I think Senator Roebling has it right. And I would just ask that Senator Cohen and others who support this bill to consider. I don't believe that anyone in this chamber, if that person were governor, would support the language in the bill as it's written. And for one very good reason, I think Senator Roebling pointed it out. If you are the governor and you want to get good information from your staff, and the law requires that all those preliminary conversations, all those documentations have to be released immediately, you're not going to get good information. You're not going to get good advice. It's a huge disincentive for people who work on a staff or in a department to give candid advice to a governor about what the budget should look like. And I think anyone who is in this room who is to be governor would not accept that. They'd say, I want good advice. I want honest opinions. Let's take a look at it. Let's have the discussion. Let's form the budget. Once we're done, we'll release it. And as Senator Roebling pointed out, all these preliminary things that we've worked on, they will be available. If anybody's concerned about how this came up, they will have a chance to take a look at it. But if you're a governor and you want candid advice, the last thing you want to do is have all those conversations be made immediately public. And so I would just say that to Senator Cohen that regardless of who the governor is or regardless of who this is directed at, I don't think anybody who serves in that office would welcome this amendment, would welcome this bill as it's written. And so I would urge that we support the amendment. I guess we're going to divide it. Is that right, Mr. Chairman? And just
that's
deal
correct.
With,
we're going to act on first one on the deletion of Section 8 on page 5 is what we're voting on now. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would urge members to vote no on both parts of the amendment, although I didn't support what Senator Betzel did to Section 11. Nevertheless, I accept the will of the body on that. But with regard to Section 8, we're not the governor. We're the legislature. We are an equal branch of government that has a right to the information, or should have a right, the privilege as well, to information about how the budget is being proposed and adopted. The notion that the legislature as an institution should not be involved early on because they're going to leak information to the media, I think is a disservice to the legislature and our point of view and the perspective that we have on budget documents. The information is maintained as non-protected, non-public data. Now, maybe you will go, any of you, and talk to the media about the information about proposals in the budget, but you would be breaking the law. So maybe you don't care about that. It seems to me you ought to care a great deal if you're going to, as an institution, if we're going to be participating in the budget process, that not only is a right and a privilege, but with it comes a heavy-duty responsibility. So I would ask very respectfully that you reject Senator Frederickson's amendment on both parts.
Okay, we're going to have any further discussion, Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just quickly to supplement what Senator Rest said, I think one of the things I've observed over the years is that too often the legislative process is a reactive one. That's a combination of the fact that we're only here for several months out of the year, and as I said, I defend that, and that we have less information provided to us. If we expect the legislature, irrespective of whom is in the majority or of whom is governor, if we expect the legislature to be a body that is not reactive but is proactive, we need access to the information. So I hope members will keep in mind what Senator Rest said, hope you'll keep in mind what I just mentioned, and oppose the amendment.
All right, we're Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to respond very briefly to, sure, to Senator Rest. Senator Rest, you're right. We are a separate institution. And also the governor is a separate branch of government. It's the executive branch. And the executive branch should have the right to have some level of privileged communication in establishing perhaps the most important document that the executive presents to the legislature. That's the budget document. And when the governor is weighing the pros and cons of the various program and policy decisions, I think the governor has the right to keep those documents non-public until the budget is presented. When the budget is presented to us, then I think we have every right to receive and expect to receive all of the information the governor had in making those decisions.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that if we're going to impose this on the governor, we should impose it upon ourselves. The majority party is often making budget decisions that the rest of the legislature has no knowledge of. And so if we're going to require the governor to put out his preliminary information even before it's presented to the full legislature, then we should require the majority party to provide that information to the minority party as they're working and developing their budget as well. And so I guess I'm really seeing a double standard here. We're telling the governor when his budget has to be presented, and we're going to say we need to get all the information ahead of time, but we don't live by that ourselves. And so I think that this is a bit hypocritical to be putting this in this bill.
Okay, the first vote will be on the Frederickson amendment as divided, will be to delete Section 8. Secretary will take the roll on that part of the amendment. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 20 ayes and 42 nays, the amendment does not adopt.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we vote on Section 11, there was a couple of questions that came up in the debate that on Senator Betzold's amendment that I think some of us would like to hear Senator Cohen address. I think Senator Senjum was inquiring as to the purpose of having the names and the detailed information about every employee, why that information would be included. And my question really refers to, line 7.29, I guess it's part two of this piece that Senator Frederickson is proposing we delete, and I presume Senator Cohen is going to argue that we should retain, which says that we need to have a statement of the work accomplished during the preceding biennium and the work proposed to be done for the next biennium. And I just wonder what is contemplated by that language. What is the actual document that is going to be brought forward here by requiring that to be included in the statement?
Senator Betzel?
Mr. Chairman, and actually when I was suggesting Senator Cohen, I should have suggested Senator Rest, because actually she was the author of that underlying section, which I was trying to amend, and she was opposing my amendment, so now she's basically kicked it over to me and said it's now mine to explain. So rather than have Senator Cohen explain it, I will. Regarding the list, the employee's name, title, and salary, I have found, just within my area of the budget review, it's sometimes very difficult to analyze my area of what goes on within the executive branch, because it isn't always clear who is doing what and where it lines up. It's sometimes you have descriptions, and it's not always clear which position in what agency or what department or what office is responsible for doing things. And I think if we had a better idea of who these people are and what their positions are and how they're getting paid, it would be a little bit better for us in our oversight function. And frankly, to have people, to have them give a better idea of the work that's accomplished during the preceding biennium and what's proposed, that gives us, again, some clue as to what proposals we should be honing in on. Now, obviously, the governor is going to come out, whoever this governor is going to be, with the governor's budget proposals and so forth. But we shouldn't have to always wait. The major things, of course, belong to the governor. But if there are some projects going on that the agencies are pretty sure that they're going to be doing, those don't need to wait for a governor's state of the state address or some big roll-up by the governor if they're already working on something that we should be aware of. The trouble is we're always playing catch-up in our budget overview around here. We're trying to find out just what are you doing, what are you planning on doing, so that we know what to do it. And we have a very limited time to do it when they've actually had months that they've been working on these things. So this actually provides, I think, better oversight for the legislative process, as we are supposed to do. We're not here as rubber stamps. We have to ask questions. We have to have a clear idea of what is coming before us. And it isn't always, the information we get isn't always quite clear as to just who's doing what or what they actually are going to be doing.
All right, Senator Senja.
Would Senator Bedsoe yield? Senator Bedsoe, going to line 730, and maybe Senator Hahn referred to this to some degree, but one of the requirements here calls for a statement, amongst other things, of the work proposed to be done for the next biennium. And that's as I understand it, before an election, anticipation by an agency. You don't know perhaps who your new leader is going to be. How reasonably can that be done? You may not even know who your new commissioner is. I'm just standing here at a loss in terms of what value that would be for any of us at that point, not knowing who the players might be in many situations.
Well, Mr. Chair, one of the things that we should be doing in the legislative budget process, first of all, is reviewing the base budget. And I don't know, I certainly don't feel that I have an able to do as good a job as I wish I could do, because I should be able to review the base budget as it currently exists. If there are ways that we can cut part of the base out, we should be looking at that. But you have to be able to start at that point and look at what the base budget actually is, knowing what they've been doing. And as I say, agencies are taking under new initiatives all the time. Maybe some are federal mandates. Maybe some of the things that just they start doing, whether the governor is part of that loop or not. Certainly, as I indicated, any governor, whether it's a new governor or a reelected governor or a midterm governor, any governor is going to come out forth with new ideas and new initiatives. And this doesn't infringe upon that. But the agencies are doing things all the time. They're adding to their missions, or they're working on things. And if the legislature is to play a meaningful role in our oversight as to what they have been doing, what they are going to be doing, we need this information, and I don't think that we're really truly getting it right now, because I don't feel that I don't have a handle on here's where we're at. It's kind of like painting a moving train all the time. You just don't know where you're at, where it's going, and I think we need to be able to get the information and lock in on it. And I think this is a better way to do it.
All right, I think we're at Senator Senja.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, right?
Right.
Mr. Chair, I want to speak against this. I think an awful long time ago, most of us learned about the fact there were three branches of government, and there was something called separation of powers. And to some great degree, that's the magic of our government. That in fact, three separate branches of government work, if you will, in some cases together, but in some cases very separately of each other, from the standpoint of governing our society. And all I see here is a whole bunch of blurring of a lot of those things we learned an awful long time ago about separation of powers. And I think we're heading into dangerous territory here. That in fact, as Senator Frederickson had pointed out on the previous amendment, that we're getting into things which I think are going to unnecessarily harm the relationship of the governor from the standpoint of his work with the relative agencies. In this case, we're asking for information which may not even be available yet. We're digging into, from the standpoint of the legislature, into the agencies, and I think that violates that separation of power that all of us learned about an awful long time ago. I hope that we defeat this amendment and that we move on and, in fact, defeat the entire bill.
Mr. Chairman? The Secretary will take the role.
Mr. Chairman?
Excuse me, Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, will Senator Senjum yield?
He will yield.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, I think what you want by your remarks is to support this amendment. This amendment deletes Section 11 from the bill.
Mr. Chair and Senator Frederickson, you're absolutely right. I misspoke. We don't often speak on our side about supporting things, so creature of habit, thank you for correcting me.
Secretary will take the roll on the second part of the amendment. All senators, have you voted? Desire to vote? Secretary will close the roll. 22 ayes, 41 nays. The amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer an oral amendment, very simple oral amendment, and that would be to delete sections 13 and 14 of the bill.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Hand moves to amend Senate File 3363 as follows. On page 8, delete sections 13 and 14.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. These are the two sections of the bill that require that the forecast has to assume an inflationary number in the forecast. And this is something that the legislature dealt with a number of years ago to say we do not want to do this. We've actually had this issue before us in a tax bill that I recall a year or two ago. In fact, I think at the time that provision was being debated, I don't recall that there was a single member of the Republican side in either the House or the Senate that voted for that. This is a very partisan issue, whether or not we're going to have a built-in inflationary number in the budget forecast. And I think that if this is a bill that the majority really is seriously interested in passing and claiming to have some broad accountability or improvement reform provisions, and this clearly is not a provision that's designed to accomplish that. Members, and we've talked about this before, but very simply, building in an inflationary number into a budget is bad practice. No business does it. No business anywhere that I know of does this. Every budget that any business would put together would say, here are the costs. If there are some inflationary costs that have to be factored in, they will lay those out, which is what we currently do. They do not assume an automatic inflation to their baseline costs and then come and say, well, in addition to that, we need something more. All this does, members, is set up the discussion where we have a projection and it's got inflation built into it, and that if we propose an increase in spending that doesn't quite match that inflationary number, then it gets talked about as now we're cutting spending, which is disingenuous on the part of the legislature to say that. But that's exactly what this provision as it exists in the bill today would require that we do, that we start talking about real increases in spending as cuts because of the way that we deal with inflation. Nobody in this building, nobody in the public is blind to the effect that inflation has on our budgets. Everybody knows that. It's factored in. It's included. But to build it in and assume it, I think, is wrong. And as again, there is no business anywhere that does this. Nobody does this. Every budget in the private sector has to be built from the ground up. Show us what your current spending is, build in your additional spending, and show us why it's there. If part of it is inflation, fine, put that in there. Show us what it is. Part of it is related to something else, fine, show us what that is. And that's how we ought to do state budgeting as well. So members, I would urge that you support my amendment. By accepting my amendment, we delete the two provisions in this bill that require the inflation be put into the forecast. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask for a roll call vote.
Chair Cohen, on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, obviously would oppose the amendment. We've had a lot of debate on the Senate floor about this issue. It's an issue I first presented to the Senate 5 years ago. Let me dispense with one suggestion of Senator Hand, and that is that, you know, if we're serious about the bill, why would we have it in here? Obviously, there is plenty of time between passage off the Senate floor and final passage of a conference committee report to determine what we can get into law or what we cannot get into law. But I certainly think when you look at a budget reform bill and the kind of package we have, this is something that ought to be included. And Senator Hand, I would just offer by way of rejoinder, you suggest nobody does this. I'm not sure why then every economist involved with the Council of Economic Advisors has supported the inclusion of inflation in the budget forecast. We're talking about people who are not necessarily partisan, people who have served over the last number of administrations. The people on the council are not people who are there because they have any particular political axe to grind. They're there because they're interested in providing a realistic appraisal of the state budget back to the governor and the legislature. And we have seen the inclusion in the recent budget forecast of language which does detail what the inflation factor is. Now, obviously, when we have had inflation in the budget forecast, we have used it as a budgeting tool. It's not meant to be sacrosanct, and I've never suggested in my offering this legislation that would be the case. But I do think in terms of good economics, it gives a better appraisal of where a budget might be. And certainly that type of budget appraisal is done in private business. I've seen it in businesses that I've served, boards that I've served on. I certainly do it with my own personal budget, as we all do with our own personal budgets. I think this language simply provides us with a more honest and realistic appraisal of where the budget forecast is. Obviously, again, I'll repeat myself, it's not meant to be sacrosanct that we find ourselves not allowed to work within that parameters. When we had the inflation factor in the budget forecast, it did not prevent us from dealing with the budget accordingly. I think part of this is that the rhetoric's gone a little bit beyond what the reality is, but the reality is simply that this ought to be in the budget forecast. We passed this legislation off the floor of the Senate last year by a very sizable margin, and I see no reason why we should not defeat the Hand Amendment by the same sizable margin.
Secretary will take the roll on the Hand Amendment. It deletes sections 13 and 14 that deals with the inflationary language. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. I mean, 22 ayes, 40 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Van de Veer.
Thank you, Mr. Is it President or Chairman?
Chairman.
We should change the sign or get a cape or something. Sorry.
Get a different one each when we do that? Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, will Senator Cohen yield for a question?
He will yield. Senator Van de Veer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Cohen, one of the things in the bills, one of the provisions is that provides an appeal process for fiscal note findings. Why do we need that at this point? Could you explain that a little bit, please?
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, could I defer to Senator Rest, who has authored the fiscal note provision?
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Van de Veer, would you ask your question again?
Senator Rest, the question was, the bill has a provision in it that creates an appeal process for fiscal notes. Why do we need that?
Mr. Chairman, in my introductory remarks, I indicated that there are any number of occasions where disagreements over fiscal notes that we get from the Department of Finance can be resolved through informal negotiations through between staff and the Department of Finance or between legislators and the commissioner. On occasion, an error is just discovered that all agree is an error. The legislator can change a provision that got a fiscal note that was not what had been anticipated, but that there are, on occasion, serious disagreements based on the underlying assumptions that went into the fiscal note, and that the discussion of those in a public setting before the Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy would advance public policy, where it would be extremely limited, where only the chair of the Finance Committee or the chairs of the Finance Committee and Ways and Means Committee in the House would be able to set that appeal process in order. It would not be dilatory. Within 5 days, the Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy would have to meet and come to a decision indicating the questions about the assumptions and the reasons for questioning the assumptions and asking for a full analysis. It would be expected that such an appeal would occur very infrequently. It could not be done by any single legislator, but by the chair of the Finance Committee in that role. So that's why.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rust, just one other question relating to this, and then I have another one. Are most of the fiscal note disputes because the fiscal notes are too low, or would they be because they're maybe they're too high?
Mr. Chairman, also in my introductory remarks about it, it's not about the number in so much as it is about the underlying assumptions and the reasons for how the fiscal note was developed, so that the legislature, again, and the Commissioner of Finance in this instance would be on solid footing as to their understanding of how the fiscal note was developed. It's not about whether a fiscal note's too low or too high, although obviously, Senator Van de Veer, when you offer in a bill that has a fiscal note and was one that you did not anticipate, you probably would have a lot of questions about how that was derived. You could not initiate the appeal by yourself, however. You would have to have the support of the chairman on the Finance Committee.
Van de Veer.
Well, that doesn't seem very fair, but I'll I do have another question, and I don't know if Senator Cohen or Senator Rest would like to answer it. It relates to the use of the budget reserve. It says that the budget reserve account is to grow until it reaches an amount equal to 5% of the biennial general fund, and I would guess that's about $1.5 billion. Would Senator Cohen be the one to answer that?
Yes, he will.
Senator Cohen, this is what the bill proposes. Would it theoretically increase the budget reserve to maybe somewhere around $1.5 billion from the $655 million?
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vandeveer, that's correct, but it doesn't do it automatically. It indicates that happens over a period of time where there's a surplus, so that if we have surplus monies, they would be paid into the budget reserve to get up to that 5% figure, but not at this point where we're running a deficit. And again, that's language that I've included based upon conversations with some of the economists involved with the Council of Economic Advisors, where they suggest that an appropriate budget reserve ought to be 5% of whatever the general fund expenditures are. So this is not language that's coming from a partisan perspective. It's language coming from what I think is very much a good government perspective.
Senator Vandeveer.
Well, Senator Cohen, this sounds like an accountability bill, all right, until you start to look at it. And it's more like the Wizard of Oz bill, because I'm looking at a bill that calls itself about accountability, sounds like it's going to increase the budget reserve substantially, when not just a couple weeks ago, the leadership here in your party gutted the reserves and gutted all the cash flow accounts and emptied them out rather than to deal responsibly with the overspending and the deficit. So now you're asking for an appeal process on fiscal notes when you're told how much something's going to cost in one of your pieces of legislation, which I don't know why you do that, because I've never heard anyone care in committee how much their bill costs. But I'm, at least from my experience, never seems to come up. And when it does, nobody knows how much it costs. So, and then I heard $38 million once referred to as peanuts. So I'm just kind of trying to understand the accountability here. What this seems to be is a bill that is an unaccountability bill disguised as an accountability bill. And I'm not sure why we're doing it. We know it's going to get vetoed. And I don't think the House is going to, there's any House Republicans going to override on something this ridiculous. So, members, I think we should just vote this down. I don't know what the charade is. It's fun theater being here, but I think we should start to get real with the people of Minnesota and start telling them what we're actually doing here.
Further discussion on the bill. Seeing none, all those in favor? Chairman. Senate File 3360.
Chairman.
Three. Senator Hand.
We have a roll call on this entire bill.
On the bill, yeah, three hands. That'd be a roll call. Secretary will take the vote on the bill. All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary, close the roll. There are 42 ayes and 21 nays. The motion prevails. Senator Clark.
I move that the committee do now arise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Clark.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary now be adopted.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Okay, remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Lynch, did you have a motion to make?
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 3138 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Okay. I think the first motion would be to take Senate File 3138 from the table. Is that your motion?
Thank you, Mr. President.
All in favor,
yes.
Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Okay. Now,
Mr. President. I would move that the Senate concur in the amendments to the House to Senate File 3138, and the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Okay. Would you give the body a brief description of the bill and what amendments were put on?
The actual amendments are in the House Journal dated April 17th on page 10108, and the House version more clearly reflects the original language and intent. This was on the newborn screening.
Okay. Discussion? Senator Betzel?
Mr. President, Senator Lynch, I think we need a little bit more discussion than that. What were the words that changed, that the House adopted, that you want us to be voting on?
Hey, Senator Lynch.
Mr. President, Senator Betzel, the bill that has returned to us reflects the original language that we started out with, and specifically the difference between the Senate version and the House version was with regard to the Tennyson warning, and I've been in communication with the agency on this, and they too are supportive of the House version, and we had a much discussion on that particular provision within the bill.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Mr. President, whatever.
Whatever, yeah.
Will Senator Lynch yield?
She will yield.
Mr. President, Senator Lynch, I'm still not at all sure what the House amendments were that you're acceding to.
Senator Lynch.
Mr. President, Senator Wergen. There's one difference between the two versions, and as you'll recall, during one of our committee stops, the Senate version incorporated a Tennyson warning, and the House version does not. And upon further discussion with counsel and with the agency, it is not thought that that Tennyson warning is applicable in this situation.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Lynch, does the bill still provide for the Department of Health to keep the 780,000 blood spots that they illegally collected?
Okay, Senator Lynch.
Mr. President and Senator Wergen, the bill doesn't specifically address that issue. Nothing has changed with regard to those specimens and what families have what their options are regarding those.
Senator Wergen.
Mr. President, Senator Lynch, so the department can keep the 780,000 illegally procured spots. Beyond that, do parents now opt in or sign permission for their children's blood spots to be taken and kept at the Department of Health?
Mr. President, Senator Wergen, this is an opt-out provision. Again, parents have opportunities to opt out of the research, opt out of the screening, opt out of the storage. Nothing has changed in that regard.
That journal page is April 17th. The page is 10376 is where the you'll find the changes. Senator Wergen.
Mr. President, Senator Lynch, is there a signature form for the parents, or do they still have to write a letter of intent at some point 48 hours after the child is born? Or do they now get handed a form that says you may or may not have your child's blood sample taken and kept at the Department of Health?
Senator Lynch.
Mr. President, Senator Wergen, nothing has changed in the content of the bill from when we saw it originally in the Senate. This is, again, it's an opt-out, and the agency is going to report back to the legislature on the further developments that they have made and the further educational provisions that they have made, because we asked some of those very same questions about, we want to know what you are doing to increase that educational component so that parents in Minnesota have a very clear understanding of what their options are.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Lynch yield for a question?
She'll yield. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Lynch, what is your motion? I'm trying to catch up with the discussion. Is your motion to agree with the House language?
That is correct, Senator Limmer. She's
okay. Thank you, Mr.
With
President,
that.
Senator Lynch. Members, you may recall that this bill collects information on newborn children, and a test can be made by application of a drop, and then that's held. The information on that, what that blood drop would have, would be held by the department. We had a very lengthy discussion about Tennyson law and how it applies when the government asks for information on its citizens. And as you may recall, the Tennyson warning is a time-honored requirement by the state of Minnesota that they have to tell what information is required from the request, what purpose will it be used for, and then who will that information be shared with. That's a tenet of Minnesota data privacy law. It's rather unique. Not every state carries that type of requirement. And yet, for the very information that was discussed in the Judiciary Committee, that was a very vital and required subject that we had a discussion on. Now, we were told by the Department of Health that this little form, one simple test can make a difference for your child, has a Tennyson warning somewhere embedded in this little bit of information. Now, I've read this 3 or 4 or 5 times. I cannot find a Tennyson warning in it. That's why we had the discussion in Judiciary Committee, to make absolutely sure that the parents knew what information was going to be required, what purpose was it going to be used for, and who was going to get it as a sharing element from the Department of Health. Now, that was part of our Senate language, and now we're getting a request now that that's not important for the Senate. We're going to adopt the House language that does not have a Tennyson requirement. I followed data privacy carefully, and I think it should be a part of this bill. This is very critical information, and it's critical information. And quite honestly, if anyone from the Department of Health is listening, why don't they have it clearly marked like every other Tennyson warning in the state of Minnesota in a nice, soft, fluffy brochure like this? I don't believe the department has it in its bill, despite the fact that we have had this discussion on the Senate floor for a number of years. They still continue to print this brochure out, and it does not have an explicit warning of the Tennyson warning on it. And quite honestly, if they were part of the discussion in the House language to not even include it anymore, I think we're going in the wrong direction. I really would like to see that this bill pass, but I wish it would go back, get the Tennyson warning in so parents know exactly what that information is, what purpose is it going to be used for, and who it will be shared with.
Senator Lynch.
Mr. President, I wasn't expecting quite this amount of discussion on this, and so out of deference to that, I would like to amend my motion and refer this to conference committee.
Okay, we're going to give you a Senator Lynch.
Mr. President, I'd like to amend my previous motion. I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments to the House to Senate File 3138, and a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
Yes. Before that, you moved to... Okay. You just withdrew your first motion. Okay, on the motion to set up a conference committee on Senate File 3138, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Pogemiller.
Mr. President, under motions and resolutions, why don't we do Senate File 1298? Senator Higgins has a conference committee report.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. President, I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 1298 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Higgins, briefly describe the bill and what changed in the conference committee.
Mr. President and members, last year the Senate passed Senate File 1298. It is the Elections Administration and Housekeeping Bill. And then the Secretary of State's office and the Governor's office staff had a lengthy conversation about this bill. The governor's staff raised concerns about 16 provisions that we had in this bill in the Senate version that were not in the House version. And so given those concerns, the Secretary of State stopped pursuing the passage of those provisions this year. And they are not included in the Senate file as it now stands. When the House took up the bill, they added three amendments, and our conference committee adopted one of those and did not adopt the other two. The one that we adopted would deals with residential housing lists. And if you remember, these are the lists that the colleges and universities put together for the county auditors for elections, showing where the college students are living. And the amendment that was added would prohibit those residential housing lists from being used or disseminated for purposes other than same-day voter registration. We thought that that made a lot of sense, and so we agreed to accept that. Otherwise, what we have left is administrative and housekeeping items. And I can... give you some highlights if you prefer, and members, you'll find this in the folder underneath your desk, but they're pretty non-controversial, they're pretty boring, and I would like you to support the conference committee report and vote for the bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Higgins renews her motion that the recommendation of the conference committee report on Senate File 1298 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1298, a bill for an act relating to elections, changing certain voter registration procedures and requirements, filing requirements, etc.
Secretary will take the roll on the bill. House senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary, close the roll. Vanderveer votes aye. Get over to your desk. And Murphy, push your buttons. They're still open. Push your buttons. Okay, all senators having voted, desire to vote, Secretary, close the roll. We had 63 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed and it's title agreed to.
Under message from the House, Mr. President, I'd suggest we take up Senator Vickerman's bill, then Senator Ress, then Senator Murphy's. Conference Committee.
Without objection, we'll revert to messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on House File 3220 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. House File 3220, a bill for an act relating to local government, authorizing political subdivisions to make grants to nonprofit organizations. House File 3220 is herewith transmitted to the Senate. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. President, I move that the foregoing recommendations and Conference Committee report on House File Number 3220 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the Conference Committee.
Okay, Senator Vickerman, a brief description of the bill and what was changed in the Conference Committee.
Mr. President, this is the nonprofit bill, and the House agreed to take the Senate position. All we changed was we included townships.
Okay. Further discussion. Senator Vickerman renews his motion that the recommendation of the Conference Committee report on House File 3220 be now adopted, and that the bill be passed as amended by the Conference Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Secretary will take the roll. Before that, the third reading.
House File 3220, a bill for an act relating to local government, authorizing political subdivisions to make grants to nonprofit organizations, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted. Desire to vote, Secretary, close the roll. There being 56 ayes, 7 nays, the bill is passed and it's title agreed to. Which one do you want?
The next message is on House File 3516, Senator Ress. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on House File 3516 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. House File 3516, a bill for an act relating to real property, providing specification of certain information about a premises subject to foreclosure. House File 3516 is herewith transmitted to the Senate. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the foregoing recommendations and Conference Committee report on House File 3516 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the Conference Committee.
Okay, Senator Rest, discussion on your bill and what the amendments. Right.
Thank you, Mr. President. The bill dealt with putting together in an efficient way information on foreclosures so that those that needed to and wanted help with that process and in forestalling it would get it, and then also involved setting up a task force, a study for how to amass foreclosure data electronically. The House had added a second article dealing with the real property, and we considered that to be technical in nature and adopted their language, and the conference committee report was signed by all three members.
Discussion. Senator Rest renews her motion that the foregoing recommendations of the conference committee report on House File 3516 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary will give House File 3516 its third reading.
House File 3516, a bill for an act relating to real property, providing specification of certain information about a premises subject to a foreclosure, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Having voted, desire to vote, Secretary will close the roll. Being 63 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Murphy?
The next message is on House File 1351. Senator Murphy, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on House File 1351 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. House File 1351, a bill for an act relating to transportation. House File 1351 is herewith transmitted to the Senate, signed Alvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. President, I would move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File 1351 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Okay, Senator Murphy, a brief description of the bill and what amendments were put on.
Mr. President, members, this is the 2007 Omnibus Transportation Bill, and Mr. President, I'll go down through some of the provisions that we adopted from the House and then go through the provisions that we left out of our bill. Mr. President and members, some of the provisions that were in the House, one expands a notice requirement imposed on a town that intends to extinguish an interest in a town road. You'll find that on page 12 of the bill. It's page 3 of your summary. It also provides fee for an international fuel tax agreement sticker, and it's for two stickers, not just one. You'll find that on page 19 of the bill. There's also a provision that removes the length limit for a middle vehicle and a recreational vehicle combination. That's on page 38 of the bill, page 6 of your summary. There's also, it establishes a new permit process for higher weighted vehicles that are hauling unprocessed agricultural products, and it asks for a $300 annual permit. And members, that section is section 60 of the bill. It's on page 47. That section was worked out with all the commodity groups. There is absolutely no opposition to this whatsoever. It also increases penalties for pipeline violations. That's sections 91 and 92 of the bill on page 66. It also, now I'll talk about a few provisions here that either direct or allow the department or the governor's office to do a couple things. One, the governor, we ask the governor to designate the Met Council or MnDOT as a responsible authority for each light rail transit facility and operation in the metro area. And that's just so that there is a clear, positive point person or point agency on those projects. It also allows the Met Council to offer discounted bus passes for sale to charitable organizations. This is something that we have intended to do for a long time, and it's finally in the bill. We also allow the Met Council to discount bus passes for people who are under 16 if those routes are not operating to the fullest extent possible. We also allow MnDOT to provide funds for a new airport at the out in Wilmer. And members, you'll find that on page 85 of the bill. There's also a couple requirements that we put in. One was we require the Department of Public Safety to study the use of credit cards when making transactions, whether you're buying your tabs or registering your car, whatever the transaction may be. We don't have that capability right now. We need to get some information back so that we can use credit cards when we go down to see our deputy register. And we also require that a variance be extended to the municipal airport up in Eveleth, Virginia. And I believe that this was a provision that we'd heard in the Senate. I think it went along on its own, might have got hung up someplace, but I believe that was Senator Bach's provision over here on this side. And then there were two other changes. One is a local speed study by MnDOT, and it's also an internet-based driver's education study through DPS. These were a couple provisions that we heard also in the Senate. I believe that they're carried by Senator Saltzman. And then Article 2 of the bill is a lot of cleanup language for special license plates, and it's just boilerplate cleanup. Members, those are the amendments that we adopted from the House, none of which are controversial, all of which we had lengthy discussion and all the details were hammered out. The provisions that were in Senate File 1971, which is a companion to this House file, that we dropped out were the issue about local jurisdiction and the administrative penalties, graduated driver's license, primary seat belts, and the child passenger restraints. And then there's there was some language, and I think that the language on the Real ID Act is probably what the whole discussion is going to be about today, and those changes are reflected in the bill as well. For anybody that is paying attention on the Real ID Act, you'll find those provisions on it's in section 117, members, and that's back on page 83. Members, we tried to come to some compromise with the governor's office on this issue, and there just seems to be a basic difference in philosophy. We can have that discussion here. I think that most people realize what the Real ID Act is. It's going to cost our state upwards of $30 million to implement it. The federal government has not come through with any sizable amounts of money to implement this. They also cannot guarantee us that the information that we send to them is going to be secure and not be hacked by some computer hack that's trying to steal our personal identification. It's a mega unfunded mandate by the federal government. It was put on a bill for the continuing budget resolution for the Iraq war. It was a bill that was for flood relief, for hurricane relief money, and it was put on after midnight with no discussion. And since then, there's been numerous states that have either opted out or has passed resolutions, sending resolutions to the federal government stating that they are not going to comply. Right now, there's been 44 states that have had 147 bills introduced to
delay implementation at the level of those 44 states. There's been four states that have either pre-filed or introduced resolutions that have said that they're not going to comply with the Real ID Act. There's been 21 states that have, out of the 44 states that have considered legislation in regards to Real ID Act, 27 states have said that they are not going to comply to this law any way, shape, or form. 27 states. The Governor's Council came out with their version of the Real ID Act, and their version was basically, we don't approve of this, it's an unfunded mandate, we can't handle this, plus we want to make sure that the information that we're giving the federal government is secure, and the federal government cannot do that. So the Governors Association, they're against it, and I have a letter from NCSL, of which many of us are members on standing committees. I am one on the Transportation Committee. And the bottom line is that NCSL, and this was voted on in one of our transportation policy committees, and also voted on by our whole body of delegates there. Basically what they said that they would ask that this that the Federal Real ID Act either be repealed or reinstitute the negotiated rulemaking process that preceded it. There was members from all 50 states there, and there was no dissension. Members, what we have in the bill, I understand that what the governor, I understand where the governor was going with his arguments during our negotiations, but I just can't. I can't go there, and I don't know how many people in this body can go there. When this bill left the Senate floor, we had two sentences on Real ID Act. Two sentences. It just said that we're not going to comply. Period. Now, what's in the bill today leaves a door open, a crack, so that if there is federal money that is earmarked to help us improve the technology by which we issue driver's license, and by the way, we have one of the most secure driver's license documents any place in the United States. But if there is federal money that's available to enhance the security measures, either in the card that we carry around or in those security measures that Ms. McCormick and the people at DVS have instituted on a personnel basis, which includes background checks for their personnel and things like that, we would gladly take the federal money for that. And we left the door open so that we could take that money and spend it. That was one of the objections that the governor had. We complied to that. The other objection was is that we just said that we're not going to comply unless they spend at least 95% federal money to bring us into compliance with the Real ID Act. That wasn't good enough for the governor's office. We talked some back and forth. We agreed to go to 75. They said, well, you know, that'd probably work, but now we want to change some of the underlying language. And that was after the governor had put out a letter saying that he agreed with the underlying language. So, members, the target got moved around. We did the best we could. The only thing that I can say is if anybody says that we're going to be turning federal money away because of this provision that we have in our bill, that's simply not true. We can take that money. We can enhance our driver's license features. We can enhance those security features that we already have in place. And I thought that this was probably this was a more reasonable position than where the governor was at. And I think that we addressed his concerns, but once again, the target moved, and we're left here with the bill today. So I would ask that we pass this, Mr. President, and move on to a better day.
Senator Sanjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members, I would move that the recommendations of the Conference Committee on House File 1351 be rejected and that the bill be re-referred to the Conference Committee as formally constituted for further consideration. And comments on that, Mr. President?
Well, I think if that's something you want to do, we can.
I sure do. Mr. President, and Senator Murphy's outlined this bill well, and I think has particularly spoken to Real ID in an excellent fashion. And you can like Real ID or you cannot like it, but today as we look at this bill, we're looking at a bill with a lot of good things in it. We're also looking at a bill that is headed to, if you will, veto land, simply because of the Real ID provision. And I would hope, Mr. President and members, that we could return this to conference committee. Give this bill one last chance to survive. And I'm told, at least last Thursday by the governor, that this may well be a matter of two or three words. We're not far away from a solution, but I fear this entire bill and all that is in it that is good is going to end up in veto land, and that's not going to be good for any of us, including the state of Minnesota. So, Mr. President, members, I would urge that we send this bill back, that we fix it up, that we give it a chance to survive, that we bring it back in a survivable fashion, and that we enact it. But today, I think, as we all know, given the letter that was on your desks last week, This bill is not going to survive. So, again, Mr. President, members, I urge concurrence with my motion and that we refer this back to conference committee, we fix it up, and we move on.
Okay, that motion is in order. discussion, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I understand Senator Sinjin's reluctance to send a bill to the governor's desk, knowing that the chances that it's going to get vetoed are high. We haven't had an omnibus policy bill pass the Senate, be signed into law for several years now. Members, this bill was passed last year. And if anybody's in doubt where they were at last year, I do have the roll call here on it. And in this roll call vote, you have to understand, we had graduated driver's license, we had seat belts in there, we had booster seats, and we had the Real ID Act in here in two sentences, basically saying we're not going to comply. Now, members, there were 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 people that voted no on final passage of that bill last year. And I'm just looking at the list of names here, and Senator Tomasoni, you're one. And it had a lot more to do about primary seat belts, the reason why at least six of these people voted against the bill. It was not about Real ID. Last year, Real ID, everybody was on board. They were going, we can't comply with that. This is a federal mandate that's going to cost us tens of millions of dollars. And it's going to expose our constituents to the greed and self-interest of some of these computer hackers that want to steal our identity. They want to take our bank accounts and our life savings. That's what this is about. If we send this back and take the provisions for Real ID out, we're really not going to know where the governor stands. Now, Senator Sinjin, you said that you talk to the governor's office and they feel that it's probably just one or two word changes. Well, you got the letter. You read the letter. The governor agreed with the words that were in here. He was upset that we were closing off the possibility of us taking federal money to implement some things that we need to do. We do have a very secure driver's license. Can it be better? Yeah, it can be. I mean, you ask anybody that works inside DVS. Technology improves every day, every day. And the last time we had a technology upgrade was 3 or 4 years ago with our driver's license. We're going to need another upgrade soon. So if the federal government gives us money, this bill allows us to spend that money. to keep our information safe and secure. If we send this back and take it out, we can't tell our constituents that we tried to keep their information safe and secure.
Senator Sedgham.
Mr. President, members, you know, we've got a pretty good bill here, but four, and that but four is a real ID, and that but four is going to end up with this bill being vetoed. And you know, it's we've got a point here. I think we've got 3 or 4 weeks left of this session, and let's use those 3 or 4 weeks to try to fix this bill. Might take a day or two, and we have the bill back before us and be able to vote it up 167-0, and that's the kind of outcome I think we have a potential of working towards if we get it a chance. But if we simply ignore the possibility here today that that we can't fix this up, get it in order, we're going to have a vetoed bill, and we're going to see a lot of these provisions for a lot of senators around the state that have put forward provisions into this bill. We're going to see those lost. And I don't think that benefits anybody. So, you know, let's give, in this case, our omnibus transportation bill a chance. Let's give it a chance to live on, and let's refer it back to conference committee, and from there work it out, and from there pass this bill off this floor as we ought to be doing.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. President, just one last final thought. Governor sent us a letter, and I quote, "I agree with the concerns about Real ID and believe the privacy safeguards articulated in this bill are important and should be adopted." Senator Sinjum, now they want to change those safeguard provisions that we have in the bill. I don't want to go there, and I don't think that this body wants to go there. Senator Sinjum, now, you voted for this bill last year when it was just a complete ban. Like I said, we're leaving the door open here for those concerns that the governor had. They were legitimate, but I don't, it's not going to do us any good. Mr. President, members, I can tell you right now, the only thing that the governor is going to accept is if we take out this provision on Real ID. I think it's important that we send a clear and convincing signal to the federal government that we are only going to comply if they come forward with money and can keep our citizens' private information private and secure. They haven't given us those assurance members, so I think a strongly worded message to them, basically like many of the other states did. One state in particular said, "Oh, fine, we'll implement Real ID, but we're not going to spend $1 on it." Basically, what they did was they effectively shut down the Real ID discussion in their state. Now, Senator Sinjum, that was kind of the broad axe to the situation. We pulled out a scalpel and tried to basically comply with the wishes of many of the conferees and many of the people who have articulated their concerns, many of which are in your caucus, Senator Sinjum, about their fears with Real ID. I think we did that in this bill. But to send it back to conference committee, the only thing the governor is going to accept is if we take it out of the bill.
Senator Moi.
Mr. President, members, I rise to respectfully speak against Senator Sinjum's motion. And in part because I think that it is certainly the governor's prerogative to send us, the legislature, a message about what concerns him about the legislations that we are contemplating. But we are the Senate, and we are the legislature. The Real ID Act, which I authored, the Real ID language, the prohibition of implementation of the Real ID Act language, which I authored, was much stronger. And in fact, it passed bipartisanly, both in this body and in the other body, and was in the conference committee in much stronger language. But out of consideration for the governor's concerns, that language has changed into this compromise form. And I think that Governor Pawlenty, who is a governor of a state that's operating under a budget deficit, where every day we're having to make very difficult decisions on how we're going to bring our budget back into a balance. I think that if we pass this measure and we send it to him, I think he'll think twice. Because, members, frankly, this is a huge unfunded federal mandate. And in a time of great budget difficulties, why would the state of Minnesota consent to allow our citizens and residents and constituents to pay for a measure that the federal government is forcing upon states? A measure that does not protect our privacy, and a measure which the federal government itself is not prepared, has not been prepared to fund at the federal level. So, members, I ask you to reconsider whether or not we ought to let the threat of Governor Pawlenty's veto pen scare us into taking this measure out. Because I think if Governor Pawlenty were to think about it, I don't think he would want to be known as a governor who is going to burden his citizens with 45% or 30% or 25% of an unfunded federal mandate. In fact, I don't think he would want to be known as a governor against all many, many other states who have voted to affirmatively not want to implement this unfunded mandate. I don't think Governor Pawlenty would want to be the governor to say to the federal government, come on, send us your unfunded federal mandate. The people of the state of Minnesota, even though we're operating in a budget deficit, are more than willing to put our pennies, to put our dollars, to put our tax dollars on the line to fund your federal mandates. I don't think Governor Pawlenty would want to be known as the governor, a conservative governor, who cares about fiscal responsibility, accountability, will want to be known that he is the governor who is allowing the federal government to allow the people of the state of Minnesota to pick up the tab for a federal unfunded mandate.
Okay, we're getting, I believe, close to a vote on the Sangium motion. Senator Murphy.
Mr. President, this is the last I'll speak on the Sangium motion. Members, please vote against Senator Sangium's motion. Senator Vandeveer passed out some information on the Senate floor. I would like for everybody to take a good look at what these national ID cards are all about. They state what religion you are. I mean, does that need to be on a document? Your gun registration is on your document. As a gun owner, I don't want that. It asks for blood type. Well, that might be useful information. But then the disturbing part is that there's going to be chips in these cards with all kinds of information in that chip. And, which kind of hacker is going to invent something that he can carry around in his hand and walk up behind you, Senator Larson, hit a button, and drag all your personal information right out of your back pocket? Bingo! Right there in his little Palm Pilot or whatever. It's not going to take somebody very long to figure that out. Members, take a good close look at that. I'm not trying to scare anybody, but I am, all right? Because this is scary stuff. Now, Senator Sangium, if you don't think we talked about this bill enough, let me kind of recap where we've been. This bill was passed in the Senate Transportation Committee back in April of 07. It was debated May 15th of 07 on the Senate floor. On the 18th, we took it to conference committee. We met. On the 21st of May, 2007, we met twice. At the second meeting, we passed the bill. March 28th, 2008. I have to back up 1 week. 1 week before that, we were going to the bill was going to be heard on the House floor. And that, an hour before, was when the governor sent a message to the representative carrying this piece of legislation that he was going to veto the bill. It's set in public view for over a year, for over a year before we got a message that the governor was going to veto it. After that, we took the bill, and we went back to conference because we figured that, you know, let's try to work this out with the governor. We met on March 28th, April 1st, April 9th, and then finally on April 10th of 2008, we threw the towel in with clear recognition that the governor was not willing to accept anything on Real ID. Members, that's the chronological history of this bill. Let's just pass it and get on with it.
Senator Jim.
Mr. President and members, and I'll wrap up too. Mr. President, member, I don't think anybody here today assumes we're going to jump into Real ID today or tomorrow or the next day or even this session or perhaps even next session. That's not what this is about. This is about, at least in the simplest form, trying to save a bill, and frankly, trying to save a bill. I wonder sometimes, looking at it, why I'm trying to defend it. It's full of DFL initiatives, page after page of DFL names, and for some reason, I don't know why you don't want to stand up here and try to salvage your provision yourself, but you don't. But this is about trying to save this bill. This is about trying to send it down to the governor's office within the framework of a conference committee, try to come to some agreement on this Real ID provision, and then bring it back here, assuming we can, and let's pass this bill. There's a lot of good stuff in it, and this is legislative suicide if we allow this this vote to go forward like it looks like it's going to, and this is going to, in fact, be adopted, and off we go to veto land. So, again, I'm trying to save this bill. I'm trying to save a bill with a lot of provisions in it for a lot of people in this room. So think about it as you make this vote, because in many cases a vote to reject at least my referral to the conference committee is a vote to perhaps end your at least provision within this bill this year.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members, Senator Sinjum, I'm flattered that you like my bill so much you're trying to save it. But depicting this as a DFL bill, I think, might be just a little bit off. Senator Wergen has provisions in here. Senator Coring, there's Senator Wergen's name again. Senator Dick Day has some legislation in here. And members, Article 2, which is, I don't know, probably a good dozen pages or so of the bill, is all Senator Jungbauer's language. He did a good job of helping us understand and get a lot of those license plate issues cleaned up. So it's a bipartisan bill, and to depict it as being a DFL bill, I think, is just a little off.
Sanjum renews his motion that the recommendation of a conference committee report on House File 1351 be rejected and the bill be referred to the conference committee to formally constitute it for further consideration. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? The motion does not prevail. Further discussion? Senator Murphy now renews his motion at the conference committee and House File 1351 be now adopted and bill repasses by the conference committee. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Third reading of House File 1351.
House File 1351, a bill for an act relating to transportation, modifying or adding provisions related to geotechnical investigations before eminent domain proceedings, the highway sign franchise program, etc.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senator
had left their... All senators, having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. It'll be at 51 ayes, 11 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Mr. President?
Senator Porcamiller.
Mr. President, is there any other work at the desk? I don't believe so.
No.
Okay, then members, I'm going to move to adjourn till Wednesday at 11 a.m. And I would hold on that motion for announcements. And it's not pardons, it's excuses, I guess.
Without objection, Senator Gimsey, Torres Ray, Chaudhry will be excused from today's session all day. Senator Bonham from 2 to 2:30. Senator Dill from 2 to 3:05. Senator Pogemiller from 4 p.m. to 4:40. Ortman at 4:45 on. And Johnson at 5:15 on. Any announcements of Senator Berglund?
Mr. President, the Health Care Reform Conference Committee will be meeting this evening in room 107 at approximately 6 o'clock.
Senator Sedgham.
Mr. President, Senate Republicans, if we could we move meet down in room 125 briefly after session, 125 for just a couple minutes.
Okay. Further announcements?
Mr.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I was just asking Senator Sedgham if something was going on that we had to caucus, and he just smiled. So
it's a secret. It's a secret.
Mr. President, I've moved the Senate adjourn till Wednesday, April 23rd, 11 a.m.
On the motion to adjourn till Wednesday, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.